All right, welcome, and thank you for that introduction from a fellow North Dakotan. Again, my name is Grant Mehring. I work in Fargo from the University of North Dakota. Most of my time is spent as a research specialist in corn, soybeans, and wheat. And then I am also a PhD student doing a wheat project, this project. And if everything goes well, next semester I will be a candidate. So life is moving fast. My co-advisors are Dr. Joel Ransom out of North Dakota State and Dr. Joachim Wiersma out of University of Crookston, University of Minnesota at Crookston, excuse me. All right, so you saw my title, Optimum Seeding Rates for Diverse Hard Red Spring Wheat Cultivars. Not that flashy, seems fairly dated, but so we know that seeding rate for hard red spring wheat in particular, which is the crop we're talking about, is a very critical management decision. Past research has shown that cultivars differ greatly, as well as just the seeding rate in general is very much a quadratic response. Low seeding rates, low yields, you get to that higher or optimal seeding rate, it gets higher, and then different cultivars will do different things once you push that seeding rate. Some will keep going up, some will drop, some will plateau out. So there's some very interesting things with that that previous research has shown. And so we know that it's different with different cultivars. And in wheat, there's very much a diversity of crop cultivars that are being offered now. More private companies are getting into it. More diverse genetics are coming in. And so this is becoming increasingly important to start making decisions based on the genetics that we know that this crop has for these different cultivars. So we all know about the kind of the classical seeding rate by cultivar experiment that's been done in many crops. And it's a great experiment, but it is also, if you really are going to keep doing it, it's an inefficient way to keep up with all of these new releases. If you think it's an important factor for your farm or your area, it's a slow process. You have to do it every year after the varieties are released, they're being grown already, and so it's somewhat inefficient. So what we've done here and what we're proposing is a kind of an alternate approach to analyzing this planting date by cultivar by seeding rate interaction. We are trying to look at the genetics of the crop generally in a very agronomic situation. So we'll get to some objectives. First, we wanted to, and these are some fairly diverse objectives, but the one thing that we wanted to do is understand how these different cultivars differ in their ability to tiller. We understand that's a very important part of hard red spring wheat and many cereals, and we think that they can tiller very differently. It's a very complex trait, and it can be quite interesting. Secondly, we want to determine the yield responses of these diverse cultivars to seeding rate and to planting date. That's kind of the bulk of the work that I have done, many locations with. And then thirdly, with this information from Objective 2, we want to develop predictive tools that will help select seeding rates, not based on any field experiment that you've done with seeding rates in that cultivar, but based on the presence of some qualitative traits, genetic traits. And for this study, we've chosen three, being RHT1, RHT2, and kind of PPD or day length susceptibility in hard red spring wheat. And with this, you would be able to predict, knowing your planting date and your location, how you might be able to best select a seeding rate. So some methodology for our first objective. We had two locations this year. We also had some locations in 2013, but they didn't work out based on kind of lack of knowledge of how to do this type of trial. But in 2014, we had a lot of success. So we were in both Crookston, Minnesota and Prosper, North Dakota, kind of northern Minnesota and east central North Dakota. So we had these 12 cultivars, which I'll detail later, but right now we just know they're 12 cultivars. And we planted them in single seed hill plots. And these had about 30 centimeters spacing. So we have in this bottom picture, you can see, and this was just one seed grown. Six replications, 4 to 5 planting dates spread out at about week intervals. And it was a randomized complete block split plot. So our objectives here were to understand the differences between, among the different cultivars, kind of a list, and also within a cultivar, how it differs over planting dates, which might be realized as weather is very different from year to year for farmers planting their crop. So here at table one, we have these are the stems per plant of these hard red spring wheat cultivars. So on the left, we have our 12 cultivars, and then we have our stems per plant. If you grow spring wheat or are familiar with the northern Great Plains, some of these are very new varieties, fairly up to date. Some are old, so they might be familiar. But you can understand, later on, I'll kind of highlight their genetic diversity. So we know that for now. So we can see that from the top to bottom, there's a very large and highly significant trend in tillers per plant, or stems per plant. One seed for the cultivar Sabin put out 44 or 43 stems. It was quite fascinating as different researchers were counting these with me and just realizing, wow, this crop really does have this propensity if you give it unlimited space and nutrients. So we know that the differences between cultivars is very large. Double from Samson to Sabin. And this is under complex genetic control, several QTL, many chromosomes. We couldn't get into this with the cultivars, picking them based on tillering. So we did the next best thing, and we just did a study to show how these different cultivars tiller. All right, so in this one, I just wanted to show the effect of the planting date on that tillering. So it's going to be a lot of numbers, but essentially on the top we're going to have our four different dates at Crookston. And you can see it's a fairly linear decrease in stems per plant from our more optimal seeding timings, which would be like the 23rd of May, which is actually probably a little bit late for our region, but it was the best we can do with this kind of being a backup trial to getting all of our many locations in the field and from both the Minnesota group and our group. But these two cultivars that I've circled in green, had a different response. They did increase their tillers or their stems at that second planting date, showing that kind of the beginning parts that there might be some differences in these cultivars. Seeding rates might be less at certain planting dates, knowing some of these sort of things. So we know that planting date will have a large effect, and this could help us explain what we're seeing in the large yield trials. All right, so this is kind of the bigger trial that we did. And there's kind of two trials that piggybacked on one another, but this would be the one with planting date. So we had two planting dates, an early, which would be the optimal, and a late, which would be about 3 weeks later than the optimal planting date, which is definitely realistic for some farmers, especially in a year like we had last year where it was quite a wet spring. We had these 12 cultivars that I highlighted earlier, and I'll go into even more great detail later. And then we had our five seeding rates. We developed these treatments based on kind of that quadratic curve that we know takes place in wheat. At our about 3.46 seeds per hectare, that would be what a farmer would plant approximately in kind of the northern Great Plains, what the Extension Service would recommend. And so we have two below that, two above that. In 2013, we had one location at Crookston. 2014, we had three locations. And we wanted these three locations, as you can see from our dots on that map, because it represents a large latitudinal spread. With Day Lake susceptibility, we wanted to understand how these cultivars might differ. So we went pretty far north to south. We have our Crookston station in red, Prosper in green, and then very far southern Minnesota in blue at the Southwest Research and Outreach Center. So we picked those on purpose. And then we also paired that with a trial that was split in half of what we had earlier. It has no planting dates, so half the treatments. We have the same cultivars, the exact same seeding rates, and the locations are very similar to where we had the big planting date study. So you can see paired together, they make a nice little map north to south through Minnesota and North Dakota. Again, so these trials were in three different locations, you can see there, and they were chosen purposely. So for the analysis, we might be able to find some interesting things. All right, so just our general data that we collected. The most important stuff to what I'm going to present today would be we did plant stands very early, about weeks one. We did heading counts just kind of before harvest when we know that most of the stems, if any die-off would happen, that would have already happened. And then we did yield. So those stem counts, you can see a picture of in the bottom. I think we had five students, probably a couple counting in Portuguese, a couple in Spanish, and some in English. And so we had a lot of fun. They probably had to work on their stretching regimens throughout the two-week periods that we did this because it was a lot of work. We almost had a mutiny, but people eventually said, hey, I like you, your research is good, so we'll keep counting these thousands of wheat plants. But so here's the results, just to show you that we got what we wanted. On the left would be the seeding rates that we chose. And then on the right, these are the counts we got at Feeks 1. And this would be just representative, one of the locations. You can see that at the early seeding rates, we were right on. The first two seeding rates, we were basically there. As the seeding rates run up, we missed the mark by a little bit. We know from the literature that there's a 10 to 15% mortality, even from the live seeding rate. And that generally increases as your planting rate increases just because of increased competition and all of those things. But we were very close. We got the response that we wanted. And then correspondingly with those head counts, on the left we would have kind of, that's actually what our seeding rates were, not what we got in the field. But then on our center, this is what we counted at about Feeks 11. So these were stems within the exact same area that we counted for the Feeks 1. And we see that there's exactly what you would hope in wheat, an inverse response. At the low seeding rates, there is quite a high here at 4.1, a lot of stems per plant. So one seed ended up with about four stems. If you go to that highest seeding rate, it was about only every other plant that even had a tiller, which is somewhat what you would expect. And then the also interesting thing that we did was those head counts. And we see that, generally speaking, there was not a significant difference between those head counts over all the seeding rates. So what we know is true, that those stems, wheat can put up those stems compensate somewhat. Whether the yield compensates is kind of what we're looking at. But the stems were definitely there. And you do see that there is somewhat of a nice quadratic response. It increases at our optimum seeding rate in the middle there, and it does dip a tad. But generally speaking, we can see that there wasn't a lot of difference. All right, so the big hypothesis of this whole thing was that we wanted to pick the genetics of these plants. So we had six groups, and I'll hurry because of time here. We had the day length sensitivity, the RHT1 and RHT2. And we grouped them so that there were two cultivars within that genetic group. And you can see the six groups. So whenever we analyzed over a trait, it wasn't usually uniform. There's only four cultivars with RHT1, six with day length sensitivity, but generally speaking, we got a nice range. And so our hypothesis is that we can look at these that we phenotyped at the USDA lab on the campus of NDSU. We did that phenotyping work. We chose these based on probably 50 cultivars that we looked at. And so this is kind of the bulk of what we want to focus on. And this is a very kind of rudimentary statistical approach. Now that harvest is basically wrapped up for us in North Dakota, I will have plenty of time to really dive in statistically. But this is an important thing. So on the left, we have our yield. On the bottom, we have our seeding rates. We knew that the main effects, the whole plots, would be significant. Cultivars would differ. The seeding rates would differ. But what we really care about is that interaction that we're showing here. I have the varieties grouped into the RHT2 gene right now. Don't worry about the difference in magnitude of yield, because these cultivars were not chosen because they're racehorses, it wasn't a fair playing field. Some were developed in 1990s. Some are brand new or close to brand new. So that's not what we're worried about. We're worried about the shape of this curve. When you have the RHT2 gene present, our blue curve here, you can see that as our seeding rate goes up, we plateau. At our highest seeding rate, we're basically about even. And I don't have any error bars associated with this, but we will get to that as the statistical grind goes on. With the RHT2 gene lumped over without the RHT2 gene, this orange line, we see that dip happened very fast. So it dipped at the mid-seeding rate. Correspondingly, at the later planting date, that was all in the early planting date. So at the later planting date, we see that the curves were about the same. The trends were fairly well mirrored each other. Knowing that possibly, if you have that RHT2 gene in a cultivar and you have an early planting date, you probably could bump up the seeding rate a little bit, or wouldn't worry about it if it did happen. Correspondingly, I did the day length gene. It wasn't quite as interesting. We see that the curves are fairly similar at that early planting date. And then they were fairly also pretty similar in the late planting date. There's not a lot of difference between those two curves. So the day length sensitivity gene didn't seem to have an impact as much, beyond that maybe it decreased a little faster, but there's a little bit of noise within this data. But generally speaking, I wanted to show those data because that's kind of the bulk of what we're getting at, that we can predict based on the genetics of the plant. So some general conclusions really swiftly. Cultivars differed in tillers greatly. We're going to do some more statistics, very rigorous, and it should really get to the bulk of this. Preliminary results are good. There are some differences. The environment's a major factor. 2013 was a much better year for us. 2014, we had a cool summer, and generally the yields were flatlined across the rates. So my boss is looking at me thinking, well, why are we even recommending high seeding rates in years like this? Because the low seeding rates got those yields that you would expect. So we're probably going to do a third year of research here at the bottom, because last year, or this past season, was kind of a singularity, if we can even say that, in the weather anymore. But we wouldn't normally have that cool of a summer for that long, and so we want to have a year where hopefully we get the responses that we would expect. And so with that, I know I'm right on time, but I could take any questions. And I'd like to thank, I have no thank yous in here like a lot of other speakers did, but we did work with a lot of different research stations, so we definitely appreciate that.
Is Muhammad in the audience anywhere? Okay, so you are right up to the end, but our next speaker is not here, so if you want to keep him up here for the next 10 minutes, you
certainly can. Grill it, no.
Now, if anybody has any quick questions, feel free.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So the question was, did we look at the seed quality and seed size of these cultivars when we kind of developed the seeding rates? And we definitely did. When we got the seed from wherever it was, we did our 1,000 kernel weights, we did our germ tests, and we most of the seed lots were very good. A lot of them were certified seed. A couple of the cultivars are getting harder to get, and so the seed wasn't quite as quality. But we hoped to take into account the live seeds and also kind of seed size so we would get the proper seeding rates. Thank you.
I was just kind of wondering about the marketability of the product though, on the other side of the story. Based on early versus late number of, stems.
Okay, so what you're trying to get at is was the yield higher if we planted early versus late? Okay, the quality. Great, sorry. So the question was actually, was the end quality high? And actually, we, for sake of time, we didn't do a lot of 1,000 kernel weight on this. We just did yield. We did protein. So our proteins were good, but I can't say that. But we do have all of our 2014 kernel weights to run, and so we could do some of that to make sure that our quality is high. That's a great point. So the question is on nitrogen and how it has an effect on yield or on tillering and how we accommodated that. We would have soil sampled and developed a rate based on that, but it would have been a uniform rate and it would have been for a high yield goal. So we didn't and that would have been site specific. So that was as far as we took it. So we wanted it to be like what a producer would use, kind of a yield goal. Yeah. Dr. Johnson.
What would you expect?
Especially this year, and I didn't show a lot of the results, we had a lot of rainfall. And therefore, we had very high yields from our low seeding rates and our high seeding rates. With lower yield or lower rainfall, we would expect that a lot of those stems that would develop early from the low seeding rates probably wouldn't fill to as great of an extent as they did this year. And so in 2013, we showed much greater, there was a little bit less rain. We showed better responses, whereas in 2014, we had much more of a flat line because of that high yield. So we would see much more of a quadratic spaced out if we had lower rainfall.
I may have missed it, but what is the RHG gene and why did you choose that gene?
Great, thank you. And this is a good question. So the question is, what is the RHG2? Those were two of the plant stature genes identified in hard red spring wheat. So those, and my genetic background is improving day by day, but those are the two that are most prominent that were developed to introduce plant stature. So does that answer your question? Sorry, I glossed over that. Yes. Yep.
And do you think your results could be useful for the growers to be able to decide they need to be plant or not? Because you have differences in variety, the recommendation of having to be plant or not can vary.
So the question is on kind of a replant year. If you see that the planting did not go well, how would these results extrapolate out to that? And that's a very, very good question, because what we would expect, what Extension would probably say is that those later planting days, 3 weeks later, you'd get quite a lower yield in your hard red spring wheat if you were to plant 3 weeks later. But all of the results that I had, and it wasn't shown here, unfortunately, for sake of time, is that there was a very little yield difference between those 3 week planting dates. In 2013 in Crookston, the second planting date yielded a little bit higher, statistically even, but and the yield differences weren't that great. So therefore, I think that later planting date, at least in the types of years that we had this year with ample rainfall, where you're going to get that seed germinated, you could easily plant later and gather success. And you probably wouldn't have to bump the seeding rate up like is recommended by extension. They would say bump it up by at least a notch or two. Yet I would say that my results say that that's not necessary. Any other questions?
He's just a graduate student.
Yeah, I need to. yes.
Did you collect stem lodging data, and how much did that influence those higher seeding rates with the non-average teaching?
We definitely collected lodging data, and in some locations it was extreme. None of it was in here, unfortunately. All right, so the lodging data definitely was seeding rates. I mean, that was an easy explanation. The high seeding rates had much higher lodging, and there was definitely varietal differences of lodging. Some were older varieties that definitely laid down. And I have not looked at that based on the genetic aspect, but that is definitely on our list of to-dos. So how any of these three genes that we are looking at might affect the lodging. But thank you, and stay tuned for that, hopefully. One last question here. All right, so that's probably one of the things we glossed over just a tad. What we did is we put out it would have been 3 feet, so just under a meter, and we counted it in both rows at the early red at about feeks 1, and then we went back to that same area and counted it at feeks 11, and we would have basically counted all stems that were present at about a foot or so above soil surface. We did not look at the seed bearing stems. My results from the hill plot trial would show that in this year, they all had nice stems, and there wasn't a lot, or nice spikes. There wasn't a lot of mortality because we counted them a couple times, but I didn't look at that specifically. So that would be an overlooked aspect. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Grant. Great job.